Welcome, everybody. We're just going to let everybody come into the room. Hi, Gargi. I haven't seen you in a while.
Hi, Dr. Laura.
Hi. And I see Eleni and Sarah. And Eva and Jim and Betsy and Leah and Melody. Wonderful. So we're going to go ahead and get started and let people, it's a small group today so far, but we'll let people arrive as they do. And that gives us more time for whoever's here. I think you all know I'm Dr. Laura Markham at this point. I think you've all been here before. And I want to make sure you also know Candace Kilbeski and Heidi Whipple. And Heidi and Candace are admin our Facebook group for both the Success Path membership and also the larger group for the course. And Candace keeps the what do you call it? The list of people who are going to talk. There's a word for this. I don't know why I'm blanking on what that word
Cute.
is. Yes, the queue. We were just talking about executive function. So it turns out there was a study that came out today in the New York Times that in the United States, the number of people who say that their executive function has deteriorated in the last 3 years, meaning their ability to concentrate, follow things up, remember what they were just about to say, find that word they're looking for. It's really the number of people who say that this is more problematic for them than it used to be has gone up dramatically. And the researchers said it's long COVID. I have no idea if that's the case or not, but I have been hearing this from other people, and I myself have been looking for words just like that. I think we're if we can, what I try to remind myself when I look for a word like that is if we're there in our hearts, it will come back to our minds. So just come back to presence. So the way we do this is that Candace keeps the queue. So if you want to ask a question, please raise your hand and Candace will see you. And we give preference to people who've not asked questions before. And hopefully we'll get to all the questions. And if we don't, I'm sure, it's always amazing how much we can learn from other people's questions because we all have the same struggles. So our first question is being asked by Medea. Medea, did I do I am I saying that right? Medea?
Yeah, exactly. Hi,
Hello.
nice to meet you. I finally made it.
I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad I'm here as well. So I have a daughter. She's 5.5 years old, and me and my husband are following your books and your courses and your advices since birth. And recently, she starts acting she's a little bit nervous. I thought it's because of the preschool and that something is happening there. So we find out that there was some issue there, but we resolved it. It was related to a boy, but this is not the question. And recently she's acting like we are doing special time, we are doing rough housing, but she's a little bit nervous, and she's not saying, "Mama, please, could you please read me?" She's saying, "Read, do this, do that. I want you to do this right now." I was sick at the latest days, and she asked me, "Would you like to play?" And I told her that I'm tired and I need to rest, and she told me, "Boring." And I'm not sure what exactly why is this happening. I think that maybe her backpack is full or something like it, but I'm not able to find the reason behind it on what exactly is happening.
So You say you've been doing peaceful parenting her whole life. But that
We
doesn't
try.
mean. Okay. I hear some preventive maintenance going on. I hear that you're doing some preventive maintenance with her. So that's great. You know that you're doing special time, you're doing rough housing. Kids can still have a full backpack, either because they're highly sensitive, right, or neurodivergent, and they feel everything more acutely. That certainly can happen. And they just need to cry more than other kids, or laugh more than other kids, or both. That can certainly happen. It can also happen that there can be a traumatic event, something that's upsetting to them that they haven't processed. And that can make them, you mentioned full backpack. I agree with you that it sounds like a full backpack. And the reason I would say that is that what you're describing is controlling behavior. You're describing that your daughter used to say, please read me a book. And now she says, read, right? And that's, it's a, that kind of controllingness, demandingness is very common when people are anxious. And if she wasn't anxious before, which is what I'm getting from what you said, she wasn't really anxious before, but now she's become more anxious. Is that correct? And
She
this
has
behavior.
been in the past from time to time, but it was like a short period, a
She
few
would be.
days or, yeah, but now I think it's a long period.
Okay. So there have been times when she has tended to be more anxious, but that wasn't who she always was. But now you're seeing it is seems to be a more seems to be a steadier state than she. So the boring thing, honestly, I do not see as the same thing, only because if you're feeling sick and she wants to play with you and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm too tired. And we love it if our 5.5-year-old would say, oh, mom, I'm so sorry, you're so tired and you're sick. Can I go get you a glass of water? But that's not what's going to usually happen, right? Usually they're going to be like, but what about me? Right? Because that's normal for children. So I think probably she to say boring, she couldn't really say, but what about me? But she was still not happy with your response, right? And I think the only appropriate response at that point for us is, I hear you think I'm being pretty boring, lying here sick. I'm sorry. I know you're disappointed. You wish we could play, and I wish we could play too. And I can't wait to play with you tomorrow or whatever. But I hear you about the general demandingness. I hear there's a general change in her tone. And that does sound like full backpack to me. So I guess I would go back to what happened at the school. You said there was something that happened at the school with a boy.
There was a boy who hit her. She told the teachers, but they didn't do anything. This is what she told me. They didn't do anything. And after that, on the same day, he hit her again.
Ooh.
And the girls, her friends, they told her to go to the teacher and to tell them what happened. But she didn't want to go because she told me that they didn't do anything, so she didn't want to go and say it again. And the same boy, she didn't want to let her use the swing and any other activities. And we tried to explain her that if the teacher didn't say anything, that doesn't mean that they are not going to speak with the boy or anything will happen, and that she. Every time there is any need to, or something that is troubling her, she needs to go and tell to the teacher. And it doesn't matter if they do not do anything at the moment. And then we wrote an email to the preschool because this is the method. And after that, she's telling me that the same boy is behaving as expected, so there are some things that he told me something that she didn't like, but I don't think it's something to worry about. But
You think that his behavior is now fine. Is that right?
This is what she's telling me. Yeah. I'm
Telling
asking
you that
her.
his behavior is now okay. Because
Yes.
initially he wouldn't let her use the swing in addition to hitting her twice, but now things seem to be okay. He's no longer harassing her or whatever.
This is what she's telling, because she told me that I'm asking her if they're taking turns on the swing. She told me that a teacher came to ask this boy to come up the out the swing so the other kids can use it as well. And yeah,
So it sounds like things are better. Is that your sense? That things, it's not an ongoing bullying situation. It was something that was upsetting to her, but it's not an ongoing situation of bullying. Okay.
I think it's That's not because she's telling stories from the preschool, what happened, with whom she played with. Every time she's, if anyone tells her anything that she doesn't like it, she's telling us. And if anyone raises a little bit his voice or anything else, she's always telling that she didn't like it. And we are asking her, how did they tell you? Go to your place or go to your place. We are doing some kind of theater to understand how exactly anyone told her anything.
So I want to acknowledge that when someone mistreats our child, even if it's another child, it's very upsetting because we're not there to protect them, right? So it's a very upsetting thing. And that can make you pretty anxious. I don't know if that's what's impacting her being more demanding at home, but it's entirely possible that it is. And it also sounds like this preschool, that there are many moments where she ends up feeling like somebody raised their voice to her or somebody didn't share something. And I'm sure that's a very common occurrence for kids, right? That they have that situation. And kids need to be coached often to learn how to stick up for themselves in those situations. And once they do gain the confidence and they begin to do it, these incidents that used to be so stressful for them end up being completely matter of fact, everyday occurrences where they're able to stand up for themselves and take care of themselves. And so they relax more. So I think my prescription would be two things. First of all, empty the backpack, right? Address there's a letter on the AHA Parenting website, which is something like how to help a child who's been bullied and bossed. And it's about how to play with your child when they've experienced some bullying so that they become more empowered and laugh about it and sort of move through that. I'm going to suggest you start there with that part of the project. And that you might, if you are able to do that stuff, that you might see that your daughter's going to start crying more also. But even if she doesn't, even if she just laughs, I think you'll see her relaxing a little bit and not being so demanding in the way that you've described. But I have another just as important suggestion for you, which is coaching. I think what she needs is for you to play act with her, rehearse with her. You can do it with stuffed animals, you know, where you do a little puppet show with the stuffed animals and you say, here's one stuffed animal and here's the other stuffed animal. And this one's, won't let the other one sing, or whatever, raise their voice to them. And you're doing this and you say, what should she do? And your daughter has to come up with what should the little one who's being around do. And if she can't come up with it, she might say, she should say, don't, or it's my turn for this. We want her to claim her voice. If she doesn't, if she's like, I don't know, you can say, okay, let's think together. Maybe what if she said this and you could have her try this out. And so that's one way for her to start to get a sense of social dynamics and what might work for her and what's appropriate. And then you can even begin to do it as, you and she can be play acting and get her laughing about it. Because one of the reasons kids don't stick up for themselves, it's the reason all of us don't stick up for ourselves sometimes if we feel hurt. We're too hurt and we feel disempowered. So once you've done what I just described, then you could have her sort of step into her power even more by getting her laughing about it, which reduces the charge around it. So she's able to like claim that strength. And I think you'll see a kid who ends up with many, you know, much more confidence in peer relationships. Do you have any other children or is she your only child?
No, she's the only one.
Often kids learn naturally when they have siblings. They learn to stick up for themselves in a fairly protected environment, right? Although not always, sometimes a sibling club or something. But you see what I'm saying? So she hasn't had that so far. But she's very aware of it. She comes home and tells you. So that's terrific. And so now it's just a matter of you coaching her so that she can develop that skill.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Luck. Let us know how it goes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Okay. I don't see this list here, but Dasha. Dasha, are you there? Oh, there. I see a D. There you are. Hi, Dasha. If you can.
I am here. Hello, Dr. Markham. So my question is about you can't see me. Let me, hold on. I'm so sorry. Let me start my video. Hi. My question is about my 7-year-old son. He has ADHD, sensory processing disorder. So there's a lot of big feelings usually to deal with. And you know, I tried to follow your recommendations on helping him unpack his backpack, try to do some preventative maintenance, all sorts of things. Where I'm running into an issue is oftentimes when he's dysregulated, he will ask me to tickle him as his way to discharge whatever feelings are, you know, built up. And I myself hate being tickled. I have really bad memories from being a child who was like at birthday parties pinned down and tickled because kids knew I was very ticklish. So it's like a traumatic memory for me. So I do not like tickling my kids. That's not something I do. And I know that you normally don't recommend tickling as a way, you know, to discharge that, the feelings. And so when I tell him, no, we're not going to tickle, we're going to do something else, he gets even more dysregulated and more upset. So I'm trying to ask, like, is this me not listening to what he's asking and I should actually be tickling him if he feels like that's what his body needs? Or do I stand my ground and say we're going to do something else instead of tickling?
Great question. Because, you know, we want to be listening and noticing. He's so astute that he knows he needs to laugh. How wonderful that he's learning already what he needs to self-regulate. That's an amazing thing. He's only 7. And of course, that we don't want him to feel what you felt when you were tickled, right? And most adults, when they're asked, if you ask a room of adults, and I've done this before when I speak to a large room of adults, many people didn't like tickling. There's always a subset of people who had the situation you did where they hated it. And then there's always a subset of people like your son who actually liked it. So there is that range. But there's even a question of whether tickling, because it's a physiological response, whether it's getting to the same thing and releasing the same thing. I don't know. And I used to think, well, it's probably really different, but I actually am not so sure it's so different. I think that it's all the nervous system. Everything we're doing is the nervous system, you know. But I think there is a compromise here that would work for you and your son, probably. So when he says, tickle me, you can go, you want me to tickle you? I'm going to get you. And, you know, bring your hand right up in, you know, like to his underarm or wherever he likes to be tickled on his middle. And, you know, it doesn't mean you even have to touch him, but, you know, just having your hand going toward him is going to probably get him shrieking, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. It probably would. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's not, if he's laughing like crazy, he's not likely to say, he might say more, but he's not likely to say, no, touch me when you tickle me. He's probably just going to say more, right? As he's freaking out laughter. And you could say, you want more? I'm going to get you. And, you know, you can just, you know, do, and you can even do some other parts of the tickling where you're, you know, a lot of times when kids are being tickled, grownups will pick them up and toss them around or, you know, pick them up and pry their arm up to tickle under their arm or that kind of thing. You can do mild versions of that. I mean, I think the whole prohibition on tickling, I think the reason that I have been so dogmatic, it's not a word I really use to describe myself, but I think I have been a little dogmatic about it. And the reason is that I've seen many parents do this where just to get a kid to laugh, just to connect, because they don't know another way to do it. And the kids don't necessarily like it. And I have heard from many parents that once they stopped actual tickling and they did what I just described, the kid didn't ask to be tickled anymore. They would ask for the tickle game or whatever, where they would, you know, the parent would, right? Because makes I think sense. It's the same function.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Thank you so much.
Right. Okay. Do we have anybody else with their hand up? I see nobody on the list so far.
No one currently.
Okay. I can start asking you questions about how things are going with your kids. But I see Gargi has her hand up. Go ahead and unmute yourself, Gargi.
Hi. So I have a question about my 12-year-old. He just turned 13. Mm-hmm. He used to like playing, not team sports, but sports like badminton and swimming. He doesn't do well in team sports. But when we moved here to the States, I enrolled him in a swim class without realizing it was like a competitive swim team class. And that didn't work for him. And ever since then, it's come to a point where he's refusing to go anywhere near water. Because he had an experience where one of the girls told him, you lost. They were not racing, but she made him think that he lost, and he took it to heart, and he just doesn't want to do anything, and he doesn't want to do any sports. And I know he wants to, but it's such a block. And I noticed that I had started nagging him without realizing, and I don't want to reach a point with him where he just doesn't listen or completely close it. I know he wants to do it, but I don't know how to get him to start something. But I need it to come from him. He needs to say it on his own that I want to just join some kind of sport. Even go on a run. Like, I want to go on a run on my own.
So I don't think that he will just decide that. He might.
Okay.
14, and one of the other kids that he likes says, hey, I'm going to go climbing on the rock wall or whatever. He might come home and say, I want to go climb on the rock wall. So that's possible if he has a peer who's invites him to do something and he wants to do it, that he would just take the initiative. But I think if he's really got this negative thing about sports after the situation with the swimming, that maybe some healing and repair is in order rather than just waiting for him to decide he feels differently. Right. It sounds like that was a bad experience. That
it was.
And I thought it was just this one thing with this girl. It sounds like it was a competitive thing. He didn't expect that. All of a sudden, here he is in a new place with these folks, you know, the other students and also coaches who are all competitively oriented. It is a problem with youth sports in the United States. It has become increasingly competitive, and a lot of kids who used to love playing soccer drop out when they're around your son's age because it gets so competitive, and you know you have to be on a travel team. I mean, it's just bad in many sports, but there are things he can do that are, you know, you mentioned running, I mentioned climbing a rock wall. There are many things that you can do. You mentioned badminton that are not things that he has to be in a group for. I don't know if you have a yard and can put up a badminton net.
No,
but there are plenty of gyms that have that stuff, and you can I would think that your local gym, if you joined with your son, that the two of you could join a pickleball team, you know? Yeah. Right?
That's a great idea.
Yeah. And I think if you did it with him, then it's a fun bonding experience for the two of you. You're inviting him. You're not nagging him. And you're having fun, and he knows he's got your protection. He's not going to be just thrown into the deep end again the way he was. And so I think he would have then that corrective experience, so that the next time someone invites him for something, he might be like, yeah, we've been playing pickleball and really enjoying it, or whatever. And I assume mm-hmm. there's a pickleball league that's not super competitive, you know, for beginners. I don't even know if, you know, it has to be a league. You know what I'm saying? Pickleball lessons, whatever. As a for instance, and I that's just one thing off the top of my head that you could do together, but there are probably plenty of things like that. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions before I ask mine? Okay, I have a question that is it's a pretty terrible thing to consider. For all parents. And that is, again, we're speaking about the United States. Gargi was just talking about how they handle sports here. But this is about, I heard from a mom last week there was a lockdown at her son's school. In fact, there was no shooter, but they thought there was a shooter. And so this 9-year-old was made to sit in silence with his class for an hour while they made sure there was no shooter in the school. Everything was locked up. And so I have a question, and this mom asked me to write something about this or make a video about it. But it occurred to me that I don't know what schools are telling kids. I know what her school told the kids, but I wanted to ask a group of parents, and I know some of you are not in the United States, and you probably think this is so barbaric and you can't even imagine what I'm talking about, but it's a real thing in the United States. So I guess what I'm asking is, do you know whether the school your child goes to has lockdown drills? And if so, what do they tell the kids about why they're doing the lockdown drills? Anybody know? Go ahead, Gargi.
So a few months ago, there was an active shooter, not on campus, but about a mile away from where our school was. And thankfully, I was in school and I got delayed at drop-off. So I got locked in. And at the time, my daughter was in kindergarten. My son was in grade 6. So they handled it differently. The kindergartners had to go. They have their own bathroom area. So they had to go sit there. And they didn't know what was happening. It was just like a fun thing. And the teacher made them feel very secure. They sang songs and shared snacks. They said they were doing something different today. And it was actually a fun experience for my kindergartner.
Right.
And then for my sixth grader, there was an imaginative kid who said, maybe there's a shooter outside. And it's a smaller class. So there was one child who was a little scared, but the teacher didn't share about it. They knew what was happening. They had locked the class. And my God, I'm just blanking out. Sorry, I blanked out. I just remember that they handled it in a way. They handled it differently for both ages. But they didn't share what was happening.
They didn't tell the kids.
They didn't tell what was happening.
Debrief them after. They didn't debrief your sons. You know, debrief to process.
No, afterwards. They did not. They did not.
So son didn't get anything except at home about it.
Well, he got it from someone else on the yard later.
Yes, that's the thing, is the kids all tell each other.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Interesting. So, Dasha, did you just have your hand up also?
I did, yes. So my son is in public school, elementary school. And we just a couple of months ago had a lockdown due to a perceived threat that the middle school students shared. So my son's school is like a combined elementary and middle school all in one building. And so the middle schoolers came in and said there was this person on social media that threatened the entire school. So the entire school went on lockdown. Similar to the previous mom, there was no actual shooter and there was no real danger, but they had to, go through with their protocol of putting the school in lockdown. It was very scary for me as a parent because we were just getting, sporadic emails that were saying, this is what's happening. State police has been called, the FBI has been called, we're investigating. You cannot come in and get your child. Your child cannot be sent home. They're safe. We'll update you in an hour. And then an hour and a half went by and they didn't send anything. And then probably 2 hours went by and they sent something that said, everybody's fine, there's no threat. And if you feel like you need to pick up your kid early, you can come in and do that. And then the teacher, my son's teacher, sent out a separate letter saying, you have received this notification from the superintendent. I'm just going to send you a separate note to let you know. The kids had no idea what was going on. We did not disclose it to them. We were all in our classroom, going through our normal daily routine, reading, counting, doing whatever, and we just had to stay in our classroom. So the kids had no clue what was going on. And, because they're 7 years old, nobody really then explained it to them because it would probably be too traumatic to explain. But our school does quarterly routine security drills, and fire drills. So my son, knows about the security drills, and it's basically, the teacher has told them, we practice for if there's an emergency. They don't specify if there's a shooter, but it's very scary for me as a parent to know that my 7-year-old has to, stay quiet or practice hiding behind a locked door or under a desk and sit there and not talk for however long. And then they have school employees walking the hallways, I guess pretending to be the shooter. I don't know. And the kids have to be really quiet. And my son has told me that when we practice security drills, we have to stay quiet so the people outside in the hallways cannot see or hear us. So that's,
Yeah.
and I'm in New Jersey, so that's what we do.
Okay. Heidi, I see you have lockdown drills once a quarter. Do they tell the kids why they're having the drills?
I've been trying to think exactly what they tell them. I know my youngest was in kindergarten last year, and I know that before the first lockdown drill, they talked with the students about it a few days ahead of time, and they emailed the parents ahead of time to let them know what was happening. They let us know. I think they framed it in some sort of positive way. It didn't seem like it was scary to my children, to any of my children. So they let us know ahead of time. They knew exactly when it would happen, the first drill. They said Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock we'll have a lockdown or whatever it was. And so they told them ahead of time exactly everything to expect. And then that first drill is the only one that's announced. And then the rest of the drills through the school year are a surprise to the students and teachers. I was remembering that a few years ago in 2019, I think, I was at a parent event at the school in the evening when we had a lockdown while we were at the school, and I was like, well, this isn't planned. And that one was a little bit scary. There wasn't a teacher in the classroom where we were at that moment. It was like an open house thing, lots of people on campus. And a mom from the PTO came in and made sure the door was locked, called the office to make sure we were following the protocols. And I sat there with my children, and one was in preschool. He was going to go to kindergarten the next year. And I remember that at that time he was kind of scary. And we talked through it and said it's to keep us safe. We talked through that there was something going on. Afterwards, we talked about there was something in the neighborhood going on. It wasn't at the school, but nearby in the neighborhood. And when he went through kindergarten, I was wondering how that drill would go for him, because that first lockdown drill was unexpected and a little bit of a surprise. And I guess we had done a good enough job of talking through that it went okay, and he wasn't really scared later doing the drills. But he remembered that one, and he talked about it more with me at home. Oh, remember that time when that happened after his school experience with the drills.
So it sounds to me like in general, no one is telling kids that there's could be a shooter. What they're being told is it's just in the same way that for fire drills, they don't like belabor the fact that there could be a fire, and it's not so, you know, it's not upsetting, the fire drill. It's sort of fun. So I think for younger kids, they're probably fine. It's not so upsetting for the younger kids. I think it's more that the middle school kids many of them have phones. And so they immediately know what's going on, and then they're terrified. And then they're, you know, calling their parents on the phone. And it's terrifying for the parents as well. As you said, Dasha, it was so upsetting for you to hear about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. For, you know, if my son had an older sibling who was in middle school, then I guess he would have known, right? Because they would have talked. But because he's sort of in the bubble, being the older of the two, he didn't know what was going on. Yeah.
Megan, I see you homeschool, and I certainly can see why that would be something you would be drawn to do in the context of this conversation. Yeah. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you for taking the time to fill me in on this horrible topic. Does anyone have any questions? I see there's a hand up here. Eva, go ahead and unmute yourself. Eva?
Oh, I was looking for the button. This is not about shooting, but it's just about, I find it quite difficult to understand that when kids hear and see terrifying stuff, and they start to talk to me about it, I find it a bit difficult how to handle that, because you want to protect them and you want them to believe that the world is a beautiful place, and it is, but of course there's another side to it. So, for example, they stated my parents-in-law last Saturday night, and they had a really nice time. They played games, and then afterwards they let the kids play by themselves while they were watching the news, she told me. And I didn't say anything, because I don't want to criticize them, and I just want to be thankful that they keep the kids and stuff. But I really didn't feel comfortable with that, because with everything that's going on in the world, and even if they're not looking at the TV, it must enter them unconsciously. They must feel the energy of the news, and so I was not really happy about that, and I don't really know how to handle those situations. So if you have any advice regarding this.
Well, there's certainly research that people who, anybody, adults even, who watch the news are believe that they have belief systems that are different than people who don't watch the news. One difference in their belief system is that they believe the world is a scarier, more dangerous place. And that makes sense when you think about what's on the news. And so children who watch the news regularly would certainly develop such a belief, could develop such a belief system. I think if kids don't watch the news, it could come as quite a shock to them. I mean, especially right now, I suppose there's always news that's bad news, but when you have a war on, there's worse news, right? So I think you could talk to your in-laws and just say how grateful you are that they keep the kids, and that you wonder if they could, you know, have the kids play in a different room if they're going to watch the news, or watch the news later. You know, maybe they don't have to watch it on the large TV if they want to check in. I mean, I'm sure that's their usual, I assume that's their usual practice, is to watch it on the TV at that time of night. But they probably would be willing, while the kids are there, to forego that if they thought of it as something that could be traumatizing for the kids. They might ask you, well, but was there a problem? Did one of your kids have a nightmare or something? And you, I think, say, you know, no, I did not see a problem. I just would like to avoid that. I don't have a problem talking to my kids about what's going on in the world, but I do have a problem with the way that's being presented. You know what I mean? Presented in on the TV.
Yes, because I'm from the Netherlands, and in the Netherlands they have, and there's also an app that you can download on the phone where they present the news for kids. So they keep it quite light, and they also mix it with like a lot of positive news. So I think I will at some point start watching this with Rosa, my oldest. She's 5 and a half, but I find her still a little bit young. It's an interesting topic. I don't really follow the news because I find it so negatively framed, and it just makes me really sad. But obviously you have to know a little bit what's going on in the world, but you always hear it, right? There's always people talking about what's going on in the world. So,
and you can also, you know, the way it's framed in on screens is usually much more viscerally upsetting because of the images you're seeing. And the sound of the voices, and radio also, there's the sound of the voices. But if you're reading it, I mean, there certainly can be in a print newspaper, there can be horrendous pictures, photographs, right? But it's still probably better. And I think you're right that there are kids' websites that talk about the news in ways that are much more appropriate for kids. But I'm not sure it's that a five-year-old needs to know.
Exactly.
Most of the news in the world today, right?
Exactly. I want to keep her a kid for a little bit.
I mean, it's different when she's 11. Yeah. I think it's different for an 11-year-old. And also, you do have to really be aware that by the time other kids are hearing about this stuff, like on social media or whatever, kids are hearing stuff and they're regaling each other with horrible facts. Your kids are going to start needing you to give them a context for what they're hearing from other kids, right?
Yes. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Do we have Ish as our next person? Is that right?
Okay. Yes.
You want to unmute yourself?
Hi, Dr. Laura. I guess I love asking you questions every time I'm here. I always have something to bring up.
I'm glad I can be here to support you.
Thank you. I mean, I love, the insight that you give to everybody who comes here to ask you questions. There's so much to learn from everybody. I wanted to discuss about a situation with my 7-year-old son, soon to be 8-year-old. And he is somebody who's not much of a talker. So if there is a situation where I feel that we need to reflect back on what would have happened, where the behavior wasn't appropriate. For example, there was, let's say, teasing or pushing or some, inappropriate actions. If I want to talk about it at a later time, he's usually not open to discussing it. Maybe I'm not approaching it correctly. Maybe he feels some shame in it, so basically that. And then in the moment when I want him to listen so we can problem solve together. So he has a younger sister. And both of them are not doing great along with each other. So when I want to intervene and kind of help them problem solve, he will either just go to a different room. Like he would either just ignore the whole thing. Both of them wanted to play the piano at the exact same time. So my daughter approached the piano and he saw her going to the piano and they're just about to sit on the stool. And he ran from the other side of the room to sit on the piano. And he sat on the stool and I was right there. And I went in and I said, oh, you both want to play the piano. And he was like, and he keeps humming. And I kept myself really calm
But it has been something that has bothered me. I've tried to bring it up with him and say, you know, he won't do it every time. He's a great kid otherwise. Even in situations where he's feeling dysregulated, he's great. So he doesn't do this every single time. But when he does, I kind of feel like, what do I do? He doesn't want to listen. He doesn't want to give up the piano stool, the chance to his sister. So I don't know what to do in the moment. And then what to do later for those situations where he didn't want to talk about in the first place. So, yeah.
So this sounds like completely normal behavior from, this is just the way kids are, right? Hopefully you and I, if we were competing for the piano, would not do that to each other because our prefrontal cortex is more developed, but yeah. It's completely normal for them to do this, but that doesn't mean that you don't work with it, right? So you're right.
Exactly.
To address it. So in that moment, you must have felt pretty critical of him when he ran and, you know, cut his sister off from the piano, right?
Well, not until he started the humming.
And then you can talk to him and he wouldn't engage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And what was your daughter doing during this time?
She was actually trying to put the headset wire into the piano. So we have this. At times they can play it out loud or they can play it into their headset. So she wasn't getting herself involved at all. The only thing I asked her to say was, you know what, would you like to tell your brother when you're done so he can come and play the piano when you're done your turn? And she said, okay. But my son wasn't in the mood to listen. So he didn't really care. And yeah.
He wasn't going to be second. Even though you thought she was first and she thought she was first, he was refusing to have her be first. Am I getting this?
Yes, exactly. We talked about it later. I went upstairs to do something else. He went away from the piano. Like when I was alone, he came to me because I did go to him before that, sorry, and tell him that I'm going to need to go upstairs. I don't feel calm right now. And I just walked away. And this was when my daughter was now peacefully playing the piano. So she did not know what we talked about. But then when I tried to, you know, talk to him, he said, well, you know, when I saw her go to the piano, I wanted to play it in that moment too. And like, I mean, I tried to talk to him and tell him, yeah. And she does that too at times. It's not like he's the only person. Of course, they're siblings. They see one person doing it and they're going to, and in that moment, they want the exact same thing. And usually they're pretty good with working it out.
So
but in the moments when it's not.
He did leave and let her play the piano. He did.
Oh, no, he didn't, in the sense where I was like, okay, you and I need to talk. Can you come here? So I held his hand, not grabbed him, but like held his hand and tried to walk with him. And then I tried to talk to him in the kitchen, but he ran, not ran away, but like he walked away. So I was like, okay, it's not the best time for him to listen. It's not the best time for me to talk. So I went to him and said, I'm just going to go upstairs. I don't feel like talking right now.
You said that because you were so upset at that point.
Yeah, because, yeah, exactly. I said it to him and yeah. I didn't feel like it would be the right moment for me to say anything. I'm just going to end up saying wrong things.
Yeah, I think that's very wise to know our limits and to know when we're not in a place where we can be compassionate and encouraging to our kids or empathetic.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that he saw his sister was starting to do the wire and getting ready to play, and he ran over so he could play.
Yep. And he literally did.
And your response was to come over and say, not really your turn. And he's la, 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 and shut you out. And you got pretty angry. And you said, we need to talk. And you held his hand, and he did get away from the piano and went with you into the kitchen, but he wouldn't talk with you, but he did leave. So he cooperated under some duress and with some resentment, but he did cooperate. So I think the fact that he was willing to cooperate with you is huge and deserves a lot of appreciation on your part, really. And, And he deserves some empathy. So when you did, when you asked him about it, he said, well, I saw her do it and I wanted it too. Yes, we understand that. And so maybe your response could be, you know, I know exactly what you mean. You know, and of course, most people would respond that way. We're not trying to make him self-critical. We're trying to help him be self-compassionate. You know, we've all been in his shoes. Now, hopefully we would all be willing to do what he role modeled. He did leave, not without a fuss, not without going la, la, la and shutting you out, but he did cooperate with you. And so really, your problem is even, I think, less that he did the thing with his sister that he, you know, ran and got at the piano, but that he la-la-la'd you, right? I think that's actually much more salient thing, don't you think?
He does do that at times, not a lot, but he does do it. And I think it is kind of, it makes me mad, obviously, because I'm trying to talk to him about something and he's obviously completely ignoring me and he's just humming.
So what if, Ish, what if when you went in the kitchen with him, if you had not tried to talk to him, quote unquote, which really is sort of a lecture, right? It's like, you can't do that to your sister just because you want to do it. That's what all of us want to say, right? What if you had just hugged him and said, I know that must have been hard watching her getting ready to play the piano. It looked like that really made you want to play it. And he'd say, yes. He would feel so understood and connected to you. And you could give him another hug and say, I know, I understand. I am so appreciative that you listened to me when I said it was time to leave. You give him another hug and he's like, well, at least my mom appreciates me. And then you say, and by the way, you don't need to go la, la, la to me, you know, and even laugh about it, right? And he would go, I imagine, you tell me, wouldn't he say something like, I know, Mom, I'm sorry. I just was hoping, you know, he's just hoping you'll let him stay at the piano, right?
Right. The only thing, though, I love that response. And I think it would work with my daughter because she's somebody who is more receptive to language in general around her, words. For him, let's say I didn't take him to the kitchen. And at times he will get up on his own. Even if I didn't, or maybe I intervene from a distance, but not in actually physically hold his hand and get him up. But let's say I hold his hand or not hold his hand. He'll get up, but he'll just go and distract himself with something else. Now, in that situation, if I'm trying to talk to him, he'll probably just walk away. If I try to give him a hug, he's not a touchy-feely person. So he doesn't want hugs. If I try to hold his hand, he wouldn't want that, you know, that's just not his way of receiving empathy or connection from me. So, but let's say he walks out on me, even if I'm just trying to make a connection and empathizing with what just happened. So does that mean that I let him be and maybe come back to that moment later, I suppose?
Well, let's get curious about this, Ish. Okay. What if in that moment, you try to hug and he's not so into the hugging and you try to connect and you're not trying. I mean, most of the time when parents say, I try to talk to him about it, what they mean is I try to lecture him and correct him. But you're saying even when it's not what's happening, when you're just trying to connect, he'll walk away. Maybe we could consider that he might be feeling some shame. He might be feeling like he shouldn't have done that to his sister. He knows you didn't like it. And also he's la, la, la'd you and he's a little ashamed.
Yeah.
You think?
Absolutely. That sounds like him, where he would feel embarrassed about what he did. And he doesn't want to face anybody in that moment.
Yeah. So I think it is important to reconnect when you've had a disconnection like the la, la, la. But I don't think that the reconnection has to look like a correction. It can look like a request from you after you've connected completely aside from the incident, after you've had a nice time doing anything, laughing together, connecting in whatever way. And then you can, by the way, you know, earlier when you la la la'd me, I mean, you'd have to describe what you mean.
Yeah.
But You know, you don't have to do that with me. You could just say, Mom, I really want to play the piano and I can't always give you what you want, but I will always understand. Right. And I think he would hear you that you didn't want to be treated that way. And that that's not a way, okay, way to treat somebody. Mm. Right.
Yes. I think that's really golden. The last line you said before that. I think it really clicked with me that I know that he knows that it wasn't the right thing for him in the moment. So yeah, like, I don't really have to lecture him. I don't really have to tell him in the moment or even later. But if I can just bring it up in a light way and just give him a gentle reminder that he doesn't have to do that. Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you. Thanks.
And I didn't address your, you know, you said he's pretty quiet. He, you know, and afterwards he won't necessarily want to talk. I think the more he feels like you're his partner and you're empathizing with him, the more he mm-hmm. might be able to put his feelings into words, you know, about okay. him, right? Because it's not about getting him to say he's sorry he pushed or teased or cut his sister off at the piano. It's more about him hearing from you that you understand that he was jealous at that moment, or he pushed her because X, Y, Z, or he teased her. And, you know, and yeah, you can't touch someone's body without consent. And you know, teasing your mm-hmm. sister really hurt her and he needs to make a repair. You can hold to those things, but at the same time, you can be offering him the empathy of why he might've done it.
Okay. But, It is normal, like not normal, but I think it's very common with him to, if we try to talk to him about the behavior, which, like I said, he's probably embarrassed about or something, like he already knows it wasn't okay, he'll walk away. And then if we want to connect with him or talk about that situation later, he would just not want to be talked about it. Now, maybe then I think I might talk more, where I might go deeper and keep talking about it. Maybe that's why he prefers that. Maybe what I should do is shorten up, make it more concise, and I say one liner and really don't have to go into more detail with him. And I haven't tried that empathy. Approach.
Lead with empathy.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
If you you don't even need to set the limit, really, because he already knows he shouldn't have pushed his sister, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. So Candace, I see a few hands up and I don't know who's there first. Should I check for a cue or will you just tell me?
Yes, I have one. Megan is first, followed by Melissa.
Okay. Megan, if you could unmute yourself.
Hi. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Megan.
Can you hear me well?
Okay. Yes.
All right, good. So I have three little girls. So I have kind of a multi-pronged sort of things going on, but one of them is my oldest daughter, who's been friends with her little friend since they were 2 and 3 years old. They went to preschool together. Now we are homeschooling and they're not. And even if we did go to the public school, we wouldn't be in the same elementary school anyway. So there's some separation there. I don't know exactly what has gone wrong with me and her mom, other than we're very different. But we used to be pretty good friends. She's just kind of a more quiet person and very not into conflict. So I could have offended her in any number of ways, and I don't think she would tell me about it. But it's come to, you know, I've requested several times, like, hey, can we get the kids together? Can we get the kids together? And then in August, you know, we got the girls together and they did a Girl Scout sewing class together and they really loved it. And I'm like, oh good, yay, we did it. And maybe we'll do it again. And then I invited them to the birthday parties like usual. And they didn't come to either daughter's birthday party. And then it comes to be her friend Lily's party. And I had asked, like, so what's Lily wanting for her birthday? Texting and just no response. And my daughter does not get invited to her birthday party, and they're 8 and 9 now. Mm. And then I talked to the parents about it and they tried to blame it on Lily, which I do not for one second believe, because they said, oh, well, she just wanted to have a small party and these are the only people she wanted to invite. From we told her just to pick a couple good friends from school, you know, from school. And Violet doesn't go to school with her anymore, but, you know, they love each other and they see each other twice a week at Girl Scouts and also at Sunday school at the UU church we go to. And so I was pretty taken aback and talked about it with the mother. And she said, oh, well, we knew we weren't going to invite you in October, so that's why we didn't come to your party. But it's like, so you planned ahead to purposefully exclude my daughter. And it's just like, I don't know what to do with this.
So first of all, I hear some hurt feelings from you when our kids are having a hard time socially. And especially if we've known the parents and we feel cut off, we end up being hurt. Mm-hmm. And I totally understand that. And it's our job to do the work to sort of take care of our own hurt, so we're not adding an overlay, because I'm sure that your daughter has enough hurt feelings of her own about Lily without parents adding more fuel to that fire. Yeah. So your daughter sees Lily 3 times a week, it sounds like, at church, once at the Girl Scouts and once at the church. Okay. So twice a week. And from what your daughter says, do they, like, when she goes into Sunday school or when she goes into the Girl Scouts, are they like long lost buddies who run up and hug each other and they sit together, or are they sort of, oh yeah, I saw her, we didn't really talk?
No, they hang out with each other all the time. They always sit by each other. So that's why I'm like, this isn't coming from the children.
And I
don't know how to address the mom about it, or if I just should just ignore them and let the girls see each other when they see each other. But it really does kind of kill me. I mean, they were at our house constantly during the pandemic and we were at theirs, and, you know, her daughter's name is in a song that I sing to my child when she goes to sleep. Like, it's bad.
It's so sad, right?
Yeah.
It's just so sad. And it is not something that your daughter should have to suffer through, that grown-ups can't get their act together. But I think, you know, if it were the child, that'd be a different story. If it's the parents, you don't have a lot of control. And I'm trusting your instinct here that you said if you tried to sit down with her to clear the air, she wouldn't tell you anything anyway. But
and I did talk to her, and she was just like, I don't know, people grow apart. But she like couldn't really say anything other than she, you know, specifically told me for one thing over text that we called her on the birthday to wish her a happy birthday, because I was like, well, maybe they didn't throw a party this year, we'll just call her and say happy birthday. And she texted me back that we can't answer right now because we're having a little party. And I'm just like, that's so insensitive. It's bad etiquette. You know what I mean? Like,
so when the girls are together, mm-hmm. 5-year-olds are old enough to be requesting playtimes with their friends, right?
You would think, yeah.
9-year-olds should be in charge of their own play dates, is my opinion. They should decide who they want to play with and when, within reason. And so does Lily request to play with your daughter?
I don't know, because that's the thing, like, people don't have house
phones to you anymore. So when you're, yeah, I understand. So do you, when you drop her off and pick her up, like at Sunday school, are there ever times when you're there with both girls at the same time?
Yes.
Can you invite Lily over? I mean, there may be things you can do on behalf of your daughter where you can say, you know, my daughter was really hoping you'd come over sometime, Lily. Do you think that's something you could do? And I don't know what Lily would say. She would probably say, my mom won't let me, or I don't know, we'd have to ask my mom, right? She'd probably say something like that, I'm assuming.
Probably.
And the mom's never there at the time.
She is there, but she's usually not there picking up because she actually works at the church now. Mm-hmm. And so she's usually busy doing other things. But like, that's the thing, like, her girls have known me since they were itty bitty babies, basically. And, you know, we'll still be like, Megan, watch me do this. And, you know, so it's like,
yeah,
your mommy doesn't like me anymore and I can't help. I don't know.
Oh, you can still love the girls though. And you can
I do love them. They're such sweet.
Yeah. So I don't have any good advice for how to do anything with this woman. I do think that the girls can be encouraged to find ways to connect, certainly the twice a week that they do. And, you know, if they stay connected, they certainly can, if they stay connected, they will be more and more in charge of their own schedules, right?
That's what I was thinking. Like, if we can hold on through this and like just do Girl Scouts and Sunday school, eventually they'll be able to meet on their own accord.
And I think it's possible that they could develop something like a pen pal relationship where they write each other notes and they bring them in to each other, you know, when they see each other at church or whatever. Right. That something that, you know, Lily has agency over, right. That her parents are not the ones in charge of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, well, that, you know, could be a thing. Yeah. I mean, I also, your daughter is homeschooled, but I'm sure she has opportunities to meet other kids. She has a lot of other friends.
Yeah, she has a lot of other friends. Well, that's one of the things where I was asking my friend, you know, they'd really like to see each other. Can we get them together? She really misses Lily. Well, she says, well, hasn't she made any other friends? And I'm like, it's not the same thing as your best friend.
Of course. It's so sad. Yeah. I hear your grief. It is really sad. And the way that it sounds like the way this mother is talking, when she said people grow apart, she meant you, not you and her. She meant the girls, but it's not true. Lily doesn't feel she's grown apart from your daughter.
That's what I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so sorry. And I also think that part of our supporting our kids through hard things is to allow them to have their grief and their feelings about something like this, about someone they love who they can't, you know, spend the time that they want to with them. And as much as possible, I would suggest for you to not let your feelings color how you talk about it with your daughter.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I'm struggling with. And I haven't done that so far, as far as like, I don't want to say anything bad about my friend in front of her, or because it's like, right, might get repeated for one thing, and for two, it's just not their business.
Right.
But I don't know how to explain.
I don't think that you can. I think you can express puzzlement and like, okay, you know, I guess, you know, so-and-so, the mom, is really busy and she can't set something up, but maybe if Lily and you keep asking, you know, maybe she could set up a time for you two to play, you know. I think
drop off. It's like, you don't have to like me, just let the children play with each other.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. And then I just had one other thing. My husband has been really struggling with peaceful parenting lately, and he's been asking, you know, well, what do I do when I have no leverage? Like, I can't make them do something. And he just gets into power struggles. And the 6-year-old has been particularly defiant lately. Like, you ask her to do anything and the answer is no. And I spoke to you about her previously.
Does she do the same thing with you?
A lot of times lately. And I had spoke to you about her a couple months ago. And basically she's just run out of patience with not being the baby anymore, because baby sister is 3 and she still takes up a lot of my time. And she's been very like, grr about that. So
she's having a hard time. So defiance is a relationship problem. It's not a discipline problem. Mm-hmm. It's what she's expressing is that she doesn't feel enough connection to you or her dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the question about leverage, we can choose to use punishment and threats as leverage, but of course we erode the relationship with our child. If instead the leverage is in the relationship, right, is the connection we have with our child, and that's where we invest, that's what we build up, is the relationship, then the child is motivated. And also you would solve the problem, I think, given what you've described as the probable origin of the problem. So the answer,
when he doesn't have any leverage,
his leverage is the relationship. That's the answer.
That's the part he's struggling with to...
So I would say there's a lot of information on the website and in the course on connection. And if he used the preventive maintenance tools of special time and of roughhousing with the 6-year-old, as well as routines where he sets up regular times during the day to connect with her. I think she needs it. And also that would melt away her defiance.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Her leverage is always in the relationship, right?
Okay. That's kind of what I was thinking, but it's like, I don't know what to tell him about that.
Understood.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, Megan. Nice to Melissa. See
you. Hello.
Hi.
I don't know exactly.
From my music box.
Not now. I need privacy.
Okay. Melissa, we can also go on to someone else while you take care of it.
I'm sorry. Oh, I think he's just a little sugar happy for a moment, but he did run off again. Thank you. Okay. Right. Sorry about that. Okay, so I'm not quite sure how to phrase the question, so I guess I will just basically describe the scenario that we're dealing with. I have two boys, 6 and 9, and the 9-year-old openly says that he hates his little brother, that he thinks that he is the most annoying person on the planet, that he is not ever going to be nice to him because he's not worth somebody. He's not worthy of any kind of kindness or respect or anything similar. It's just sort of nonstop cruelty and bullying. And it feels like there is just nothing that can be done. I obviously can't stop the words from coming out of his mouth. When he says something mean to his brother, I can't close his tongue. I have, in these last 6 years, not really found a way to connect them. There are times that they will get along, but in the end, it always turns back into just, things going much too far all the time. And I feel pretty lost on how to turn things around.
That's so hard. It's so hard because you're right. You can't still his tongue, but I think there are things you can do. So first of all, the resentment that he's expressing, when he expresses it, you can expect him to, you can stop him and you can say, whoa, we don't do that in this house, right? That's not kind. That's not respectful. You can always tell me whatever you want in private, but you cannot hurt your brother's feelings intentionally. Now, if you did that, would you get into a big power struggle at that point because you don't have the connection with him to support such a correction?
Pretty much. Yes, that is true. And past that, though, he is just so incredibly persistent. It's a little bit difficult to describe, but he does not. I have a friend who said, he's a kid who has such a strong mind of his own. It's like he needed to be born without any parents or any authority figures whatsoever. He's not interested in that. Unfortunately, he's also a small kid, so he has to have them. But I'm not sure.
Okay, so he's very strong-willed. So he
very strong-willed.
Direction very easily. I'm hearing that.
Yes.
And do you remember, either from the sibling spotlight in this membership or from the course, which has, of course, a week on siblings, do you remember anything about melting the chip on the shoulder?
I do remember some, but I'm sure I could use a refresher on all of that.
So I'm going to see whether I can drag this little JPEG right over here and drop it in. Oh, look at that. I might be able to. Okay. This is a little printable on healing sibling resentment. And basically, you're working on several fronts at once. You're working on connection. You're working on helping the child to express the pain that they felt 6 years ago when their sibling was born and the pain they have felt straight along every time they feel like he has superseded them in your affections or whatever, any upset or jealousy. So you're helping him process those feelings, as well as you're working on your connection with him. You're also working on facilitating the relationship between them, but that's really tertiary because the first two things have to happen before they're able to feel like they want to connect. And you're also setting limits on the way they treat each other, just the way I modeled a few minutes ago. They're more open to those limits when you have done the first two things, when you have been completely empathic to the feelings they have of how they've been wronged. And it's terrible that you brought this younger brother into their life, right? Mm-hmm. That processing has to happen. And the connection has to happen. And then these other two things can happen as well. So it's sort of a big project. It might be something that you'd want to have some parent coaching for. I would recommend that because I think somebody could help you stay on track. Because, you know, when we feel like our six-year-old is being attacked and undermined and sabotaged and belittled and ridiculed, we want to spring to their defense. And even though the person doing it is our other beloved child, we can get pretty angry at them. So it's hard to feel compassion and like we want to help him process his feelings when we see him as the perpetrator, not the victim. So it can be very helpful to have somebody to talk to about our feelings so we can process them. And the, the child really does need that kind of processing. When I see a situation with entrenched resentment, inevitably it happened at the birth of, or shortly thereafter, when the younger child came into the picture. And so it's pretty entrenched by the time, 6 years have passed.
Yes, so for sure.
That's the prescription, but I think it would be great to give for you to give yourself some extra support to do this big project. And it is totally doable. I've seen it happen. I've seen it work.
Okay. All right. Any advice for in the moment of?
Yeah, I would really work hard to connect. So, but I would stop him from doing what he's doing. So if you're in the living room or at the dining room table or something, and he says something nasty, and then you would say, whoa, that's not okay to do that, to say stuff like that to your brother. That's hurtful. Are you out of hugs again? And I would actually give him a hug and I would whisper in his ear, no hurting. You're going to need to make a repair if you keep this up. So you're giving, that sounds like a threat, right? But you're giving him an expectation, but at the same time, you're giving him the support of a connection. So you're, and you can say, let's say that the six-year-old says something, whatever it is, about a sports team. They're talking about a sports team. The six-year-old says something and the nine-year-old says, you don't know anything. That's so lame, and criticizes him. You can say, it sounds like you're pretty frustrated because you know a lot about this sport. And it sounds like your brother doesn't know a lot. Sounds like he could benefit from a big brother who helped him learn it instead of putting him down, right? So you're acknowledging that it's irritating to him. You're doing some form of empathy. Yes. What I just said wasn't super empathic, but I'm looking for you to find a balance between empathy and warmth to him, but at the same time really be setting the limit. Because your 6-year-old does not deserve to live in a home where someone's belittling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is something that I've tried a lot in the past, and I offer that empathy all of the time, but it is rejected often violently and with a lot more cruelty.
Okay. So what's happening is that he's unwilling to go to the pain he's experiencing that is old pain from when he was 3 years old and he didn't feel understood or loved anymore. And that pain is driving his behavior and his mean words. And if you empathize with him, you're disabling the anger and the pain comes up. The anger is a defense. So, right? Anger is always a defense against pain. So, or fear. So he's what has to happen is the work that I described first about connection and listening, helping him feel safe enough with you that he'll process that pain. And once he's processed the pain, he won't be driven to put his brother down. But what's happening when you just empathize in the moment and you say he gets more vicious, it's because of that. He's like, I'm not going anywhere near that pain. I'm going to lash out more, right?
Yeah. Okay. Any thoughts on connection? That's also really difficult with him because...
You know what? I need to move on to another question. But I would say there's a lot. We've already talked about connection earlier. There's a link in the chat for connection on the website. And there's, I think, you know, if you just start with the basic preventive maintenance and the stuff from the connection.
Well, it's
fine. You can, it's going to be one step at a time, right? It's not going to be.
I hear you. I need some help figuring out roughhousing issues because he's a sensory seeker. So it just turns into violence.
Okay.
Is there somewhere I can look for that?
Yes. I think that the group is going to have a lot of ideas for you about roughhousing. And I think we already have resources that on roughhousing that, but they can specifically speak to him being a sensory seeker.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Welcome. Good luck. It's a big project, but I think now's the time to take care of it. Don't wait any longer.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Leah. Leah is next. If we have time for one more, and just to mention that Melissa, I did bring it to the Facebook group. We do have resources on roughhousing, and a lot of us have sensory seeking children. Not that it's funny. I understand. It's rough. It's a rough one.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Candace. Okay. Leah.
Hey, hello. I would like to go back to one of the subjects that came up a little earlier, and it was about the news and the television and everything, if I could. And my question is about if we have any developmental information about topics and when we can discuss, for example, war situations with children, especially children that are not in the war. I mean, that's different, but as observers, if we have anything developmental about that. And also the second part is how to deal with kids that want to play war and want to like be a little more rough, but also bringing in the war issue and killing people or animals or whatever, and using guns or pretending like they have guns. And, you know, we also see a lot, I mean, I see a lot of parents that are actually buying the guns to the children. And sometimes they defend themselves by saying, well, this is for hunting, it's not for killing. But the kids are using it for everybody, and they're playing rough with their guns. So if there's something you can offer on that topic, thank you.
The hunting guns they're buying are not for actual hunting. They're hunting guns to play with, right? You're saying they're not real guns, or they are real
guns? Yes. No, not real guns. Not guns. I'm talking about little kids, like even like 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 year olds.
Okay. So... The question about guns and playing with guns, you know, different communities do different things. And there are many parents who think it's fine to buy their kid a gun. You know, there are many parents who wouldn't buy their child a gun and then report that the child turns everything into a gun, right? It's like they pick up a stick and they use it as a gun, right? I myself think that's preferable, the stick becoming the gun, rather than the kid having an actual gun. I was one of those parents who would not buy a gun for my child to play with. But I will say my kids ended up getting their hands on squirt guns in the summers and with water and had squirt gun fights and thought that was the best thing ever and so much fun, right? So, you know, I think play is play. And kids, I think the most important thing about play is talking about play. Like, how does it feel? And I think you can actually have some rules around play, even play with a toy, with a stick that they're pretending is a gun. It can be that you never point at somebody's face, right? Because that's very threatening, right? So I think that you can put rules around how guns are used even in play. And I think you're going to have to see, you know, if it's not your kids, right? And, you know, if it's kids of parents who want to buy them guns, I think the most effective rule that you, contribution you can make here is simply to ask the kids how it feels and what it is like. And, you know, it's what they're really exploring probably is power, not death. They don't understand death. They're exploring power, right? So I think you can, I think always our job is to try to help kids explore how they're feeling and how to express that, right? As opposed to just to putting limits on what they, how, what shape the play can take, right?
Okay.
The question about developmental appropriateness of topics, you know, as our, as social media falls into the hands of children and, you know, phones fall into, you know, fall into the hands of kids younger and younger, they are exposed to news. So once somebody else's 11-year-old has a phone, then the 11, you know, the 11-year-old that doesn't have a phone is still going to hear about stuff. So then you sort of have to talk about things that are going to come up. So if there's a big world event, the kid's going to hear about it, or anything, even, I don't know if it's a world event, but just anything that people are talking about, right? That could come across, that that the other children could bring up. So I think it's less about what's developmentally, I mean, you're certainly not going to tell a six-year-old anything if you don't have to, but six-year-olds hear about things, right? So sometimes, so, you know, you want to keep your ears open. And sometimes if it's a big enough thing, you're going to want to say, have you heard anything about, you know, the war in Israel right now, for instance? And the kid might say, what? No, mom. And you're just like, you're done. That's fine. The kid might say, yeah, what is that? I heard a lot of people died, right? And so then you do have to talk about it. So I think, again, it's less about developmental appropriateness, but some things, you know, I wouldn't say that to a six-year-old, but by the time a kid is 10 or 11, they're hearing about it, right? I would think. Is that answer your question?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
And then the framework of how you talk to them is always that you're asking what they've heard. You're asking what they think. You're asking what the kids are saying. You're correcting anything that's clearly not, you know, that's erroneous, right? And you're trying to answer questions, but you don't have to know all the answers, right? You can say, we can look that up. You can say, I don't actually know, you know, if it's things that you don't know. But mostly what you're listening for is the child's fear, and you're reassuring them that you're going to keep them safe. Like if you're their parent, that you're going to keep them safe. If it's not your child, like in your case, you're reassuring that their parents will keep them safe or whatever.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's hard to live in a world where we have to talk to our kids about wars and school shootings and all of that. And I think, as I said, everything comes back to the nervous system and kids needing to feel safe. And ultimately, that's the reassurance that they need, is that they will be kept safe. So thank you for great questions. And it was great to see everybody. And our next office hours, I think, is at the beginning of December. So it's only in a few weeks. Is that correct? Do we know this? I'm going to quickly look because I'm pretty sure. Yes, December 1st, Friday, December 1st is our next office hours. And it's at a different time of day than this, earlier in the day. So have a great month or a great few weeks, and I'll see you next time. Thanks. And you can unmute yourselves, please, to say goodbye to each other.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Oh my gosh, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Everybody. Bye.